them all. Step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 122. I have the high ground coming at you right now. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast. This is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. Check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Howdy, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, and I am here to bring you episode number 122, which I've entitled, I Have the High Ground, because we're going to talk about the top 50 games on Board Game Geek and run through those, which I did about 2 years ago, and everybody really enjoyed that, so I figured, hey, there's been a pretty good shuffle since then, so let's keep going through them. I think I did 200 through 101 myself, Brian and I did 100 through 51, and now I'll bring you 50 through 1. I don't think there's too many surprises in there. I mean, obviously, if you're in the hobby, if there are things you haven't heard of or you're playing for the first time, there's great games in there. But I think it's worth going through them all, and you can hear my thoughts, and people like hearing my thoughts, and I like giving my thoughts. That's all they are, just thoughts, just opinions, but hey, fun to talk about. Alrighty, let's see. Events. So the big one is Tabletop Day, which is June 1st. The portal will be open midnight to midnight. We're going to have our auction. We're going to have some board game championships. We're going to have the library open. I think there'll be some deals and sales. More to come. I'll probably be trying to go around trying to record with people. So if you want to be on an episode of the podcast and you're there, check it out. If you're not in the area of the portal and you're listening to this, thanks for listening. And definitely find your FLGS that's doing an event for Tabletop Day and go hang out with them, support them, do that. I think that'd be really great. So, yeah, that's kind of the plan there. What else is going on with me? School's in that weird spot I teach. So I'm in that weird spot where it's like the end is soon, but not, I don't mean not soon enough to be pessimistic, just not soon enough that I can kind of let my foot off the gas yet. I feel like 3 more weeks, get close to Memorial Day weekend. And then it's kind of like, all right, now this thing just coasts. So a little bit stressed right now. Going to put on a comedy show and finish up a class I'm teaching and keep school going. And there's just a lot. And I feel like I might be getting sick. So we'll have to see how that goes. Let's jump in with some game reviews. I got several games to bring to you. So I'm going to start right off with one of my favorite games that I'm playing right now. And this game is Magnastorm from Fureland. And I believe this is the same designers as one of my favorite games of all time, Gaia Project, a.k.a. Terra Mystica. And Magnastorm is really, really good. I really like it a lot. So what's happening? So thematically, you're trying to kind of do scientific research on this planet that has a huge magnetic storm going on, which is represented basically by a board where half the board is cut off at all times. You can only be moving along half the board. Meanwhile, there's a sideboard, and all the players are working off that. They're taking crew members. So they're crew members of your faction, because you're competing against each other, and they're crew members of the neutral faction. And so on a turn, you'll pick one of these up from a top board and place it on a lower board. When you do that, you're going to get to either do one of two things. You can either pay resources, which are colored cubes, to move your scout along the board and then be able to place turtle labs. There are labs that are shaped like turtles, which is kind of how you're going to score points and work towards the goal of the game. Or you can collect those cubes off of that space, as well as a lot of the spaces have a bonus action that you can do depending on what you choose. So that's the main structure of the game, and the round just keeps going until that's over. The other option is, as you're pulling crew members off the top of the board, you kind of lower the cost to take over these commanders. I'm not sure exactly what it is. I think you're just getting them to kind of join you and earning reputation for doing that. And it gets cheaper as the more of those get pulled off the board. And you want to get these to get there. Why are you doing all this? To gain reputation, as I said before. And it's a race game. You're racing to a certain number of reputation. When somebody hits that, it'll trigger the end of the game. You'll finish that round. Then you'll do some final scoring and see who the winner is. I really like that race element. That's really interesting. The game will also finish if it gets to four rounds. So most likely somebody's going to trigger it in the fourth round. There is a chance to trigger it in the third. I haven't seen anything in the second round yet or anything close. But I like that race element. Really makes it interesting and kind of does a lot. I'm sorry. You do not finish the round when you trigger for reputation. Everybody gets one more action. So it is different from finishing the fourth round. What do I like about this game? So it's really quite simple. It's a little bit of a pain to set up, I guess. The teach isn't bad, but the choices are so rich. Because you are deciding, what crew member do I want to move? Where do I want to move them? What actions do I want to get? Am I going to try to save up to be able to do two future actions? Or do I need to do an action now? This game really has the timing element down of a Euro. That's so good, where the interaction is in the timing, not the destruction of the other player, but who will get there first. One of the other main ways you score reputation is to complete these objectives. And the objectives are either to move up on these science tracks, tech tracks, which are very similar to Gaia Project, and kind of give up resources from there, or to place turtle labs in different sectors. So the board is divided into six sectors. Half of those are cut off at all times. And you'll have things that'll say, remove four turtle labs from the same sector, or move three from three, you know, one each from a different sector. So you're trying to set all that up. So you kind of get that big move, and then whoever does that first gets four reputation. So it's a big deal to be able to score that. The game was great with three. It was great with two. I'm excited to play it with more people. I absolutely love it, and I was actually a little nervous because I hadn't heard phenomenal things. And I know I love Gaia Project so much. I definitely had that fear of like, oh no, it's from the same designers, which means I'm supposed to like it, but I don't know if I will. And I absolutely love the game. I'm itching to play it again. It is also pretty quick. With two players, we played it in like 50 minutes. With three players, it was like an hour 15. It says 70 to 100 minutes on the box. And I'm guessing four players probably close to 100 minutes, but two and three have been less with the teach. Again, I am not one to say faster games are better, but this game's just really smooth with really good decisions. Now, you could get hammered with AP. I mean, the choices are rough in this game, so you could definitely get stuck on that front, and I could see that being an issue for some groups. But yeah, I really, really like this game. Definitely the best game I've played this year, let's see, since Wingspan? Yeah, so I think vying for my three favorites this year are Wingspan, Fleet Dice is still my favorite, and Magnastorm. So that's my three favorite games, and we're only in April. I guess you could argue I could have one per month, that would give me 12 for the year or whatever, but hey. But these are definitely my top three games. I'm trying to think if there's something else I'm missing that I played. Nope, that's it. Sorry, in terms of those. Next up, so we got a copy of Kapow. So Kapow is a game from some designers in... Oh, I'm sorry that I'm driving and I don't have this. Porcupine? Something Porcupine? I'm so sorry. And Doug got me a copy of this game, and I thank him for that. And I can't remember the name of their company, so I will... I'll have to figure that out and get that to you. But I think this is their first published game. I'm not sure, first or second. And Kapow is a dice rolling two or four player. I can't remember if there's three player rules. I think it's just two or four player. Superhero versus super villain game. So what happens is you get a screen, you get a character, which is going to give you a bunch of abilities, and you get kind of this board with a layout of all these abilities. Then you roll these trait dice, and you also roll this bigger action die. And the action die is interesting because, like Dice Forge, it has buildable faces. So you put different faces on there, and that's what you have to be able to work with and roll. And you have blank faces, and then you have different symbols on the faces. So you roll all your dice, then you assign them behind your screen. I'm going to punch, and I'm going to block, and I'm going to upgrade my dice, things like that this round. And then your hero has their own abilities. Often it'll say you automatically have a free die, or you can lock in for this ability. One of them has, like, entangle. You entangle the other player, so they, like, lose a bunch of dice for a couple turns. Or they have to spend dice to get out of it, kind of thing. That's kind of what you're doing. What's really neat is the way the attacks and defense work, or you have kind of your base. So you choose what do you want your base attack to be. Then you have modifiers. You can kind of add or not subtract. You can add to that. So maybe my base is 2, and then I add plus 1, and then a multiplier. And I believe you can only have one of each. I think the add-ons you can have more of. So you basically do that. 2 plus 1 times 2. So now my attack is going to be 6. You can assign your dice that way. Similar on the defensive side. And then there's a whole bunch of upgrades and other things you can do. And like I said, character abilities. You're upgrading that action die. You can get another one of those action dice. And you can get more of those trait dice. Or you can just go for the quick swing. Just try to take them down. Expect them to be kind of upgrading and powering up while you are just hammering through their low defenses in the beginning are kind of the ideas of which you could go. What's really neat is that several of the spaces allow you to put blank faces there, so the dice have blank faces, but blank faces still mean something, which I guess kind of means they're not blank, but they're less powered, but they still allow you to do something. So when you roll kind of a bad side of a die, it won't necessarily hurt you. There's still something you can do with that. And then it just kind of goes back and forth. You start with different amounts of health based on your hero and supervillain, and you're just trying to get the other person to zero health. The first person to do that wins, and you just keep playing rounds, and the player who goes first is always the person with less health. So it kind of gives you that chance to catch up or whatever. It was really fun. It was neat. In the grand scheme of two-player fighting games, it's just always hard to know where a game like this will fit. The dice powering up was cool. The extra powers on the heroes was really nice. I really liked that. And the action die was neat. It felt like a little bit of a gimmick as opposed to like Dice Forge, where my dice are all that and that's what I'm trying to do. But I think that's kind of what they were going for. Like, there is a game here, and then there's these dice that you can change the faces as another part of the game. But not that's not what the game is all about. So they were kind of adding that as a gimmick, not a gimmick, not as a negative word in that case, right? Like, ooh, this will be fun to also be able to do this in addition to the other thing. So, yeah, I really like that. So we have a copy there. They're going to run a tournament on May 9th. I think it's a Saturday. I should have put that in the events. And they're going to run a tournament of this at the store. So that'll be awesome. So you can check out Kapow and see what that's all about, and play and compete and get your superhero-ness out on the, on this post-Avengers world, Endgame world that we're now in. I saw the movie on Sunday, so that was good. All right, next up for me is Lord of the Rings Journey in Middle-Earth. Now, this one's kind of a funny review because I want to get it out there because I want to talk about the game. I guess to be timely, whatever. Cult of the New is fine with me. It doesn't bother me at all. That's the fun of it. But my experience is currently playing this game is playing the first scenario 3 times. So I need to get to those other scenarios, so I really owe you to do a follow-up. But I think an initial review is good, too. Take it as a first impressions, if you will. I think first impressions are reviews, and I think that's okay. I understand people wanting more than that, but I think a first impression is also a review and also good in terms of that. Anyway, that's not what this is all about. This is about Lord of the Rings Journeys in Middle-Earth. This is a new game from Fantasy Flight Games. It is a fully app-integrated game, and it's a campaign game. So I believe the campaign is something like 14 quests that you go on, or adventures, I believe they call them. And it alternates between like an exploration kind of overview on a bigger map to a small battle map. And you're going back and forth. The main structure, the game is run by the app. The main structure of the turn is you're given a quest, something you have to complete, and you have to do whatever that is in the very first one. Sorry for the spoiler. You're trying to like track down these bandits, and you have to find their tracks. That's it. Story spoiled slightly. And so you're trying to do this. So you're trying to interact with these search tokens. deal with like kind of local threats. There are enemies that pop up on the map and attack you, and as well as doing exploration. So it kind of has a structure similar to the LCG. So you kind of have your character phase where you get a chance to power up, you move around, you take actions, everybody gets two actions. You can basically move, interact, or attack. All of those things are done by a deck. It's kind of got shades of Gloomhaven. So you've got this deck of cards that have symbols in the corner telling you whether they are a success, a fate, or a miss. Or failure, I guess, in that case. And so you're asked, when you do a test, you're asked to see how many successes you draw. You can then spend these inspiration tokens, which are pretty plentiful. Every time you explore a new map space, you get an inspiration token. Generally, when you kill an enemy, you get an inspiration token, and there's other tests you can do throughout. So they're rather plentiful. A lot of the special abilities give them to you. And so you draw from your deck, and you look for how many successes you have, and you input that into the app. Now, at first, it can seem a little frustrating because some of the tests require, like, let's say they want you to have four successes, but they don't tell you that. But the successes are cumulative. So if I take Legolas and run over there and Legolas gets two successes, it'll say, oop, keep going. And then later, Kathy takes Gimli and runs over there and gets two more successes. It'll say, aha, now you've progressed. And it'll tell you what that progression is and what happens. And so you don't really get that at first, and you think like, oh my gosh, I have to get more than two successes, which can be hard to do, but it's cumulative. Then there are other tests where it just straight out tells you what's happening and what you need to do. Test this skill and get this many. So all the heroes have five skills, which just tell you how many cards to draw, and you draw those cards and you're on your way. So that's kind of how that piece works. So attacking kind of works the same way. You skill test against your weapon. So your weapon will tell you what to do. Oh, if you draw one success, you get two hits. If you draw three successes, you get, you know, seven hits and you pierce their armor, kind of thing. And you input it on the app and you can see where that is. Again, all driven by the app. I am not an anti-app and board games person. I prefer a lot of things to be physical, but I'm also happy to have an app that somebody made that's already there. So we don't play with the Gloomhaven apps, for example, but people swear by them. I totally get it. Faster setup, faster in between. I like shuffling the little decks. If they gave me Journeys in Middle-earth with little decks I had to shuffle, I would do that too. I imagine I would enjoy the game, but I understand that the app can have even more things. They don't have to give me a deck of 20 adventure cards for Adventure 1, 20 adventure cards for Adventure 2, events for Adventure 3, blah, blah, blah. That's all in the app. And so I can appreciate kind of that. And there's plenty of table space taken up by the map. So anyway, you go through, that's kind of what you're doing. And meanwhile, those cards also have text on them. Now, you don't do the text when you draw them, but you'll have times where it'll say Scout, Scout 2, Scout 1, Scout 3. You get to draw the top X cards off your deck, look at them, prepare one, which means put it in front of you, and then you can put the other card on top or the bottom of your deck. So if, for example, it's a weakness card, which everybody gets these weakness cards, which are basically just misses, you can take that card, put it on the bottom of your deck, and now you know you won't have to worry about that card coming up. Then the shadow goes. So during the shadow phase, all the enemies move and they attack you. They kind of move in packs and attack. And they do either fear damage or physical damage, which you can then block by testing. And then you draw little cards. It's very X-Wing-esque, where you draw these little cards, and they'll tell you, like, oh, now you have to suffer this damage or whatever. And you kind of look through that and see what happens to you based on that. So that's how that works. If you reach a threshold, you then have a last stand, which is kind of a neat thing. The app will tell you, test this to see how many successes, and you can see if, as you're dying, you do something, or you happen to heal two and survive, or whatever it is. So that's kind of a fun element of the game there. And then the threat increases, which is very similar to the Lord of the Rings card game. And the app will give you these thresholds, like, oh, when you get to 60, you lose. When you get to 10, there's going to be more enemies that spawn, or there's going to be, like, darkness falls over the land, and people will suffer damage while in darkness. All sorts of different things that they're always generated. By the way, I should tell you that each scenario has its main goal that's always the same, But then all the side elements, the map, the little search tokens, the extra quests, the items you can obtain are all randomly generated. They're not unique, but they're randomly generated to that. So that's kind of a neat element of what's happening there. And then finally you have the rally phase where you take your deck, you shuffle your discard pile and your deck together, and you get to scout again. And during the rally phase, you can play cards to heal you, which is discard those wound cards that you've had. And that's kind of what's happening. You just keep repeating and going through. I don't think the first scenario has anything mind-blowing in it. I've played it 3 times. It's fun that everything changes. I like that. The deck drawing is interesting. I like getting the abilities out. I like setting up for hits. It really feels like getting those inspiration tokens is a big deal, because most of the cards have the fate icons. So now you can just turn those into successes exactly at the rate you're looking for. So that's kind of been my focus. The story isn't amazing. You know, I want to find the bandit's hideout. Surprise, you found it. That's the story. You know, there's a couple little side things happening. But something really draws me to this game. I think, for me, it's Lord of the Rings. So I think if you're not a huge Lord of the Rings fan, or that doesn't matter to you, I think me saying, like, oh, this is really fun, I think it's irrelevant to you. Because I think the fun in this game is in the Lord of the Rings elements. So just kind of take that as you will, and kind of think on that. But I've really been enjoying this game, as I said. The 3 plays have all been fun. One by myself, one with Larry, one with Zephra. It's hard to store 2 campaigns, especially with all the cards and things you get, and the way the decks are shuffled together. The heroes, you get to choose your hero. You get some basic cards, you get their cards. You also get a role or a class? I don't think it's either of those. But you get like extra cards, and you can swap those out. So like Legolas can be a hunter, but then swap to become a pathfinder or a burglar or anything like that, which is really kind of neat. So I've got the second one set up. The second one then goes to this battle map, and it's basically like a tactical minis game where I'm trying to find all those different things and work through and kind of do that. So I've got that all set up. I'm going to play that soon. And get a chance to do that. But I'm really enjoying Journeys in Middle-earth. I like it a lot. It's a $100 price tag. I bought it. I expect there to be a lot of expansion content and support for this. I saw that future campaigns were $5, and I was like, dang it. So I can get this now. It's $100, but then $5 in the future. And a lot of positive feedback online. Reviewers have not been positive. I am being positive. I definitely would tell you to be hesitant based on the price point. I definitely would tell you to be hesitant if you're not gaga for Lord of the Rings. That's why I wanted to kind of get that first impression out, is some of you are going to listen to this and go, yep, I'm getting that game. That's going to be great. I don't care if there's kind of random draws and this, that. I want to do that. And those of you are going to go, nope, that doesn't sound good to me. And I think that's where you're going to land on the game the whole way through. Now, that's silly for me, having not played it, but I'm getting that sense that you gotta be all in from the start for that. Awesome. Last up for me is Bumuntu. Bumuntu is an abstract tile game. Not tile laying, just tile game. And it's kind of a variant of chess, where you have all these different movements you could do. It is a 2-4 player game, and it's really a Euro because you're trying to score points. So you're going to put a whole bunch of tiles out on the board, and then there's kind of like a market, and all the tiles represent African creatures. So you got crocodiles and zebras and flamingos and elephants and rhinoceros and all that kind of stuff. And your pawn will be on one of these tiles on a grid. Let's call it 8x8. It might be 7x7, something like that. With all these tiles that just get randomly laid out. And you can either move one space, including diagonal. It's kind of like a chessboard or a checkerboard. Or you can do whatever the action is. So like the rhinoceros can run in a straight line and stop anywhere, and when it hits a player, it'll knock them one space back. You then, the tile you moved off of, you collect. So you get that, oh, if it was a rhinoceros, I get that tile. And then that'll have some ability on it. So some of them will move, some of them are slightly different color, and they can kind of move this market up and down. So you could say, ooh, I'm going to move the rhinoceros up because I just collected one of those and move this one down. Others of them just give you a mask, which will score points, and others give you a banana token, which will allow you to move one space before you take your turn, not collecting any tiles. But like, ooh, I either got knocked off a tile, so I won't be able to collect one this turn, or, oh, I really want to be on that tile instead, so I'm going to move over there with a banana token. And that's kind of the structure of what you're doing, and you just keep going until all those tiles that move the market up and down are gone, and then players score points. So it's like set collection. You get points for having the most, well, that little market tells you. It's either if you have the most or second most in a category, or just straight up all of these tiles are worth 1 point. And you're kind of moving that market around to make things worth more or less for you, as well as the mass you collected, and there may be a point or two somewhere else there. It was a really neat game. It definitely has more of a point-scoring set collection feel than it has an abstract chess feel. Chess has a movement and a beat and a rhythm to playing the other player. This would be really hard to do chess with 3 or 4 people, so it's much more of a Euro. Really nice quality. I think the price point's like $30. It's got these big, chunky plastic tiles. Really nice. So it's a good family game, like probably next step up family game to play. Like, oh, I've got kids that are really into games. Let's play this as well. I don't know how it would play with 2. I feel like that market would be a little boring with 2. Like, I'll collect all the elephants and I'll collect all the rhinos. But I enjoyed my play, and at that price point of what it is, this is a WizKids game. It was really nice. So that is Vamuntu from WizKids Games, and check it out. That's what's been on my table. Let me know what's on yours. I'm going to come back just after a break here and talk about the top 50 games for board games. Let's do that. Everybody, welcome back. For me, it's a day later. For you, it's 10 seconds later. I just wanted to make a correction before when I was talking about Kapow and I did not know the publisher, and it is Two Ton Porcupine. So that is who published Kapow. Two Ton Porcupine. All right, we're going to go through the top 50 games on BGG. So as I said earlier, I did 200 to 101. And then Brian and I did 100 through 51, so I'm going to finish this up because it just seems to make the most sense to finish it. I don't know how things have shifted in the 2 weeks since Brian and I did the other, so I can't remember exactly what I talked about. So this is just as of today, which is May 1st, 2019. Number 50 here is Anachrony. I feel like we talked about this. I really want to play this game again. Actually, I want to play a lot of the games again from Mind Clash. I really enjoyed Cerebria, and I have Tricarion here. Relearned it, ready to play that one again. And Anachrony was just one of those games that I played for like 3.5 hours. The rules were a little rough. I didn't really find the draw of sending back in time all that interesting and all those kind of things, but I would definitely play it again, and it's a top 50 game here, so sounds good. Dominant Species is number 49. We just got a copy of this in the library from GMT. Thank you to them. Played this on International Tabletop Day last year. Full 6-player game. It's really cool. It's very swingy at 6. So, I mean, I'm down for 6, but I feel like 5 or 4 is a little bit better because you can control things a little bit more. But it's definitely a really interesting game, and as far as like heavy kind of games of this style, heavy interaction game, it's definitely up on my list. I like it a lot. Like I said, that last game I played was very swingy, and it was just hard. It was just like, oh, I'm in 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, and now I finished at the bottom. Like, there's just nothing you can do if you're in the wrong spot. But hey, plan better, don't be in that spot kind of thing. Kalis is 48. I really, really like Kalis. I haven't played it now in a little while. Brian and Larry to play it like 2 years ago is probably the last time I played it. I should play this again with Kathy. It's really good. It's a really good worker placement with a really mean mechanism that can also kind of be avoided, and it's really cool because you build your worker placement spots. probably in the end, there's some spots that are better than others to build, but that's okay because it's got a kind of neat thing where you build it and then you get a bonus for other people use it, kind of like Lords of Waterdeep, but definitely heavier than Lords of Waterdeep for sure. But Kayla's a really good old game. If you haven't tried it, well, old 2005, you should definitely go back and play it if you like medium to heavy worker placement games. Race for the Galaxy is 47. I really like Race for the Galaxy. I really like Roll for the Galaxy. I really like Jump Drive. I didn't like New Frontiers. I feel like Race is the one that I'm least likely to play, but probably the best. This kind of has the Agricola Caverna thing where I want to play Caverna instead because it's a little bit easier to worry about, but Agricola is probably the better game. I think Race is probably the best of all these games, but I never want to teach this game to people. The iconography is just brutal, so it's just not fun to play a game that feels like it should be 30 to 45 minutes and play it in an hour and a half because people are asking questions about iconography. 46 is Keyflower. Keyflower is still the best key game. Keyflow was interesting, but it just kind of waters all that down, and you don't have the auction, and the auction's the best part. And getting green meeples, because in that game, green meeples aren't available from the start, so when you open up a green meeple, you can now bid on something, and it is yours. You've got a currency that nobody else has. Yeah, a really good game. Plays great with two, plays great with five. Have I played it with six? It gets a little long at five and six. That's its biggest issue, but yeah, definitely a really neat game. Another old game if you haven't played it. Well, 2012, but should try it. Seven Wonders is a really good drafting game. At this point, I really like the Paper Tales game better. I prefer Paper Tales, but I haven't played with a lot of the expansions for Seven Wonders, and I would like to try those. I think that'd be really interesting. But Seven Wonders is kind of the great, you know, drafting strategy game that you could play with seven people that plays for 45 minutes, so definitely got its spot. Solid game that I probably would sit down. I'm probably not the one to put it on the table, but I could see me sitting and playing a game if other people had it out. Android Netrunner is now dead. I played Android Netrunner when it first came out. I had a little bit of it recently, a starter box and maybe a few things. And it's a great game, but it's just definitely in that lifestyle game, so I'm just not likely to go back to that one. Clans of Caledonia is 43. I just like Terra Mystica and Gaia Project so much better that I feel like I would play them. Clans just doesn't play out. It's funny, when you teach the game, you're like, I am teaching Terra Mystica. And then when you play the game, you're like, I'm not playing Terra Mystica. So it's a really interesting game on that front. 42 is Voyages of Marco Polo. This is one that I'd like to go back and play. I felt like I was really enjoying this game, and then kind of the group, it died out, and people weren't interested anymore, but I was still interested in keep playing it. The other one is Grand Austria Hotel. Both of those kind of same designer team that I'd be willing to sit down and play anytime. Robinson Crusoe, really great game, worker placement, co-op, working against these stories. It's great storytelling Euro mechanism, so it does a really good job there. I feel like escape rooms have kind of replaced this for me, the escape boxes and all that, just kind of like, how do you figure out the puzzle and get out? But I would play Robinson Crusoe. I don't know that I'm going to bring it to the table. I know there's a new box that just came out and all that. It's very popular. Hence why it's number 41. 40 is Le Havre. I think that I'm also in the camp of this is one of my favorite Uwe games. I really like Le Havre. It's really fun. The end is a little weird when you can do all the shipping and you really have to know how to do that and whatnot. But yeah. Eclipse is next. Eclipse is a really fun game that we played for 11 hours, and Kathy will never play a space game again because of it. There's a new version coming out, who knows when, from Colossal. It's been a while now that they had that Kickstarter and hasn't come out. Ultimately, Twilight Imperium is better than this game, but this plays a little bit more on the Euro mechanisms. Zulkin, the Mayan Calendar. This game is just one that never clicked for me. I played it wrong at first with the dials turning, and then when I went back to do it, I was like, this planning is just too much, and I couldn't quite get everything to work. People always seemed smarter than me at it, and it was hard to, you know, do well in a higher player count game. But it is a good game. I probably would sit down and play it. At this point, Teotihuacan is what I'd rather play of that style. Azul, I don't know. It never really hit me that amazingly as that great of a game. I did like the Stained Glass one. I keep seeing it and thinking I should pick up a copy to kind of have to play with the family. I feel like if I did that, it would move up in my list. Right now, it's just a game that I borrowed to play to review.
and it feels just kind of like that, which isn't really fair to the game, but that's how it is. Power Grid is 36. I don't know. The last times I've had a chance to play Power Grid, I've said no. I don't know why. We played one game where the auctions were just so off. It was so imbalanced, but I probably need to go back and play this game. I'm intrigued how my math brain would do with this game to calculate everything, if that would be a good, bad, or whichever. I'm willing to play Power Grid again. Through the Ages, this is the third edition, so we're going to skip it because the fourth edition is ahead, and it's amazing. Star Wars Imperial Assault has just died. I just couldn't get anybody to play it. I thought it'd be a great game with Kathy. I thought it'd be a great game with Zephra, and it's just too much in a box for that thing, and Gloomhaven just completely outshines it. Pandemic Legacy Season 2, I have not finished with Zephra. We got pretty far, like June or July, and haven't finished. I'm wondering if I need to just roll it solo or just get it out and set it up and Zephra will jump in. But Season 1 was one of our favorite games to play together. Kingdom Death Monster, I played just a little bit of this game. I know it's great. It feels like another lifestyle game to just get into, and I don't really have anybody that I can play it with, so it's just not one that I'm going to get near. But I mean, people that love this game probably in the same way that I love Gloomhaven. Mechs vs. Minions. Yeah, this one's up on my shelf, and I keep wondering if I have to pull this down again and play this and get this going, because it's a really fun game. I should try that again. And what a great thing. Oh, my best friend works for this company. Everybody's going to be mad at me. I don't know. The company that made this game, so he sent me a copy of the game because he works for them that make League of Legends. I'm so sorry that I don't know the name of the company, but he works there and he's a gopher and he doesn't play video games. It's quite funny. But yeah, he sent me a copy of the game, which is really cool. Blood Rage. Blood Rage is number 30. Eric Lang game from Simon. Come on, games. Yeah, it's a really cool game. It just has a huge runaway leader problem in the third age. It's all of a sudden just score 120 points and jump way ahead. It's kind of weird. Food Chain Magnate, number 29, another great game with a runaway leader problem to me. I know people, like, you got to kind of, everybody play it on the expert level, and that'll be good. This one, it runs away faster, and you've got to really be clever to come back, so it just hasn't, it's hard. Somebody commented to me, they said, you know, because you like to teach games so much, a game like that isn't going to work for you. And I was like, yeah, that's totally it. I want to teach people games they haven't played, and then suddenly it's like a game where it's like, well, you haven't played this, so let's play three times, and then you'll get it. Feast for Odin, people love this game, and I played it once with three players, and it was 3 hours, and it was like, whatever, there's all these worker placement spaces, if you take that one, I'll take this one, if you take this one, I'll take that one. It just didn't really sell for me, but I guess I gotta try the solo play on this, and maybe I would really like that. I did try the solo play, and that was fun, because I guess it's like a big puzzle, but as far as like three and four players, I just don't think I want to be part of that. Orleans is one of Kathy's favorite. I hate setting up this game. I will set up almost any game, and Orleans is just a nightmare to set up. It just feels like there's so many things for what the game is going to be. So now I'm more on the Altiplano bandwagon for that sole reason that I yell at other people for. Like, come on, you don't want to set up a game? That's the most lazy thing I've ever heard. I don't want to set up Orleans. Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition. There's just such a running gag with one of our previous store managers that I hate this game, and I absolutely had fun. The Cthulhu theme does nothing for me, so I don't care about that. But I thought the game was great. Earlier in this episode, I talked about Lord of the Rings Journeys to Middle-earth, which is based on that system. I'm going to enjoy that more because I love Lord of the Rings, and I expect to see that jump up this list. Agricola. Agricola is probably Uwe's most famous game. It's his most brutal game. It's a great game. But last time I played it, it was rough on the two-player part of just stabbing each other in the last couple rounds to score no points. But it's a great game. If you haven't played it, you should play Agricola. If you like heavy games. If you don't like heavy games, then avoid it. It's not super heavy, though. It's probably more towards medium, but there's enough there that if you don't like heavy games, odds are you won't like this. Mage Knight, the board game, is the best solo play game ever. The only one to come close is Lord of the Rings LCG. It's so very, very good. I really want to get this out and try it two-player. I never want to play this game with three and four, and I only ever want to play it cooperative. But this is one I would love to get back to the table because it's really good. And I really want to try Star Trek Frontiers. I keep trying to track down a copy of that at a good price. Probably because I don't want to play a lot because I already have this one, but the Star Trek one would be cool too. Caverna of the Cave Farmer, slightly above Agricola. It just doesn't have quite the punch that that one does, but I'm really excited to try this with the asymmetric powers from the expansion. So Caverna's really cool. Don't play it with seven people, even though it can play that way. Brass Lancashire is a great game. I think I like Brass Birmingham better, but I haven't played Lancashire in so long now. But I played this in 2007, 2008 when it came out. And now there's that new edition, which looks so awesome, and people should play it. Arkham Horror, the card game. So I picked up more of this, and I played more. And I see where people like the story and the upgrading, but I actually don't know if I like the idea that you can win or lose and you progress. I love that in terms of, like, playing in an evening, like getting two people together and playing a story arc over an evening. And hey, no matter win or lose, we're going to keep progressing. We'll get to play all these. But where I've done a whole thing on this first Lord of the Rings LCG, so I want to be careful of repeating myself too much. But I think my new thing is I like the fact that I have to figure it out and I could lose and then I'd have to tweak my deck. This one feels like I could go in with any deck, just lose. And I keep progressing and I keep seeing things and that, and I just don't really get experience, so my deck doesn't go anywhere. So I think I actually want a challenge on that front. Puerto Rico is number 20. Really solid game, played it a ton. Probably, no, not when it came out. Well, 2005, 2006, so it was 3-4 years old, but I played it a lot back then. I guess I would go back and play it. It feels like a game that's now dated and that there's other things that do it better. I don't think I actually want to play Puerto Rico again. It'd be fine. I would. I just, nope, not really. Concordia is amazing. I think this is a top 10 game for me. This is number 19. This is a game that everybody should play. I think even if you don't like Euro games, you will probably like this game if people can keep it in a good time frame. This game should run like 45 minutes with two people, maybe an hour to an hour and a half with four people. I don't know with six with Venus. It might be a little bit longer. I want to try that. But it's just so good. It's so genius in the way that that game's put together. It's really good. Viticulture, you got to play Viticulture, this is number 18, with Tuscany, and you use that board. I don't know how you do it. You got to buy now like Viticulture Essential Edition and Tuscany Essential Edition to get the board, which is super frustrating. But if you get that, then it's a really good game and actually can hold a lot of players pretty well. We have a famous game where one person was just saying blue, green, orange, and just yelling out the colors and letting everybody keep playing, and it kept the game moving. It was great. Seventh Continent is probably the most overrated game to me. I just never understood this game. I do not get the joy of this. This is where story is so boring to me. If I want an adventure story, I just want to watch a movie or read a book, because reading cards and making choices about what items am I going to hold on to when I just can't use them because they're irrelevant, and then suddenly, oh, you should have kept the axe, not the raft, it was awful. I hated this game. I hated it. Seven Wonders Duel is a really good two-player card game. It plays itself out, so that's the one thing I would say. There is an expansion for it, but, I mean, it plays itself out, and then you play a year later, you'll be super happy. So this comes out a lot. Zephyr loves this game. Brass Birmingham is number 15. I alluded to this. They're so very similar. You could argue that one is almost like an expansion, but they're different games. So, but I think in the long run, Birmingham's going to outdo Lancashire. Spirit Island is an amazing cooperative game that even people who don't like cooperative games but like heavier games should play. It's the heaviest co-op game. Its only negative is that it's actually easy. It looks like it's going to be hard, and I barely ever have lost this game, if not ever. And so then in order to make it up in difficulty, you have to add fiddliness. And so that's where you kind of walk that line of how fiddly do I want the game versus how hard do I want the game to be. Number 13 is The Castles of Burgundy. This is a Kathy and my favorite. This is a great, great, great two-player game. It's fine at 3 and 4, but I really like it at 2 because it just goes and you get to make all your decisions. And this is a classic, simple mechanisms, amazing decisions game. Like some of that I alluded to earlier, like Magnusstorm and some of those. I don't know that Magnusstorm will rise to the popularity of Castles of Burgundy, but new editions coming out, so there's that. War of the Rings, second edition. Really good game. Secret Cabal was just talking about this week on their podcast. War of the Ring is great. It plays okay at 4. It's best at 2. But unlike Rebellion, which says it plays at 4 and is wretched at 4, this game can play 4. The mechanisms are okay to be able to do that. And people can make their own decisions and kind of work together. But it's really a two-player game, and it's very good. I played this about a year and a half ago with somebody who just cold, like, just picked up games, was like, that's what I want to play because of the theme. 11 is Terra Mystica, formerly one of my top game of all time, that has now been surpassed by Gaia Project and Gloomhaven, which are higher on this list. Spoilers. Twilight Imperium 4th Edition, have not played it. Very similar to 3rd Edition. Amazing game. Got to set up a day to do it. But if you can set up, like, a rules teach, a play initial rounds, have lunch, play a whole bunch of rounds, pause for dinner, finish the game, you'll have a great day. You will love that day. As long as everybody knows you are here for the next 8 hours. But they will enjoy it greatly. Great Western Trail. Talked about this a few episodes back that my friend Evan did an episode on heavy cardboard and just like made me want to bring this game back out. I tried it by myself solo, like 2 or 3 player, and I couldn't get all the things that he was talking about going, but it made me want to dig back into this game. I felt like I like other Fisters better, but yeah, this rating and all of this make me think, Scythe. Scythe is 8. I don't really think Scythe is overrated, but it's just not a game for me. I just can't, the little frustrations I can't get over in Scythe, and I feel bad because it's like a game that people like to talk about and they know about it and I want to talk about it and I want to try all the things. We got halfway through the campaign there, Rise of Fenris, and I got frustrated. And I can tell you why I don't want to go into all those things now, but I know there's a great game and I love that there's like a battle map and a Euro game going on. But the part that is hardest for me is the game is telling you to build an efficiency engine and I do great with that. And then it flips a switch and you don't know when where it says, get everything you can before this game is over. And that it's so unpredictable when that's happening. And if you are 2 turns late on that, you're dead in the water. And you just go, my whole efficiency engine's down the drain. I did not win because I didn't see where that switch was flipping and I can never see it. And that's my issue. Gaia Project is my 2nd favorite game of all time. The asymmetric powers, the choices you're making, the points you're scoring, the goals you have to do each round. I mean, timing is of the essence in this game. And that is the greatest Euro mechanism ever. Trying to time to beat other players to certain things. Or the time that I'm going to do my own actions. Which this game just beasts up because the end game or the end round scoring goals are so key. To playing the game, you need to know what's coming up when. You can't really do well against people who are good at it the first time, but you can the 2nd time. So I don't think it takes a whole bunch of plays to get there. And I like to just play a different race every single time. The game is so, so good, and I love to stretch my actions beyond anything else. And Gaia Project just made Terra Mystica better. Yeah, that's it. Star Wars Rebellion. I love this game, but nobody wants to play it with me anymore. The expansion is so good. The Star Wars theme is so good. It is so much fun. You feel like you are playing Star Wars, very much Episode 4, and it's awesome. I really like that game. I love having the minis in this game. I think they really add to it. I love the cards and all the actions that you do. The theme is just through the roof, and it is so exciting to not just say, I'm going to take this, but I'm going to take the Star Destroyer, and I'm going to attack here where Chewbacca is. Oh, so much fun. Twilight Struggle. Twilight Struggle is an excellent 2-player game. I've played a lot of this. I really want the iOS app to be on my phone, so I could play it more because I don't really have access to an iPad to put it on to play often. GMT also sent us a copy of Twilight Struggle, so that's one that hopefully Kathy and I'll get to play again, which we've probably played 3 or 4 times now. It definitely requires mastery of the game, but it's a 2-player game, so you can kind of like learn from losing. It's like chess in that sense, right? Like, let me play a really good chess player and learn from what they're doing. And that's how you can play this game, which is awesome. I have like the 1st edition and you need a later edition. I think even just 2nd edition and on, but there were some printing errors. There's some cards that they reworked that are way better. Yeah, I actually see the game sitting here next to me at my house and it should be at the store, but I need to get a play. I want to get a play of that in, but I think there's might also be another copy at the store. I'm not sure. I'll figure that out. Terraforming Mars is number 4. Great game. My game of the year from 2016, and it's really, really good. I don't own this game, and I haven't played any of the expansions, which I feel like, for people who know me, that's probably one of the biggest shockers. We have set it up like three times with all the expansions. One of them was like Gen Con at midnight, and I was like, nope. I'm not starting that right now. It's like the last night of Gen Con when I get homesick and whiny and difficult and irritable, and I was like, yeah, I just can't do that. They played, and I went to bed. So that was, I think, my last chance to play last year. Through the Ages is so good. It's such an amazing game. This is the only game that I would ever say I prefer the app to the actual board game. Now, if I were to teach somebody, I would teach them on the board game, and that would be fun. But the actual board game takes like an hour 15 per player, and that's just crazy. The app is just, boom, we can all play, and it feels the same on the app as it does on the board game. And I don't like saying that, but I said it. But it is an amazing game. I think everybody should play it. The length of the game might be an issue. I would just tell you to download the app and learn from there, and then maybe play a physical copy of the game just to say you did it, but just go get the app for $10 and play it. It's so good. I almost always have a game of this running. Pandemic Legacy Season 1. This is a phenomenal game. This is the number two game on the Board Game Geek list. This was one of my greatest experiences playing with Zephyr, my daughter. We had so much fun, so many twists, so many turns. They just really knew how to put story with these mechanisms, and it's just so wonderful that it's co-op, and the games are 45 minutes to an hour, and then you open stuff and get new rules, and they had a great mechanism. If you lose, you get bonuses, so you can do better. It's amazing. It's the best Legacy game to date, other than number one, which is Gloomhaven. And I talk about this game all the time. Kath and I have been playing it recently, just got new characters. It's so phenomenal. However, my stipulation is that I think if you play it in your own house with someone who lives in your house that you can play with regularly, and you can play 53 scenarios like we have, you will love the game. But if you have to meet weekly at a store to play one four-hour game with four people, I don't think you're going to like this game. So that's kind of what you have to think of. Or solo play this game with two characters, I would imagine. And it's so good. It's just so good. It is my number one game. It is Board Game Geek's number one game. The story, the combat card choices are amazing. So much fun. Upgrading your characters, wanting to get rid of characters is just such an amazing thing that Isaac did in creating that. It's a reason this game was just heralded with awards. I sat behind Isaac at Dice Tower Awards and just kept saying, get ready to get up, get ready to get up. It's going to be another award. And yeah, it's a great game. Gloomhaven, my number one, BGG's number one. So I suppose we align. Yeah, there you go. So that's the top 50 games. I imagine if you've been in the hobby for a while, there's not a lot of surprises in there. Hopefully some things that I could bring to light if you hadn't heard about them or whatnot. Sometimes just fun to hear somebody talk about things and see their opinions on games and whatnot. That's what I really like to do and listen to on podcasts. So there's that. I think that'll do it for this episode. So this has been episode 122. I have the high ground of Portal Gaming Podcasts. I am your host, The Brand. And until next time, I hope you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street, Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on May 1st, 2019. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening.